From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. This week, we're starting off in a place that's kind of a paradox.
That looks like a fountain down there.
Yeah, I think there are some. There's like a little lagoon. Oh, man, that's not the river, that's the lagoon.
It's in the United States, but it's also sort of not. We sent our reporters, Michael Corey and Catherine Miskowski, there.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wait, is that the fence?
The U.S.-Mexico border fence.
Yeah, that's the fence.
That's it?
Yeah.
Get out.
They're surprised because, well, it doesn't look like an international boundary. It looks more like something you'd find at a gated community that's taking security a little too seriously. It's a 15-foot-tall black steel fence with gates, and the gates, they're standing wide open. You can pretty much come and go as you please.
So we just walked through the fence, but we're still in the United States.
Yeah, we are in Texas, but we are kind of walled off from the rest of the country right now.
And one more thing. They're standing in the middle of a golf course. So how are Catherine and Michael in Texas, but walled off from the rest of the country? Let me explain. The border is actually the Rio Grande. Then there's a no man's land, and then you hit the border fence. But in this case, that no man's land is the Eagle Pass Municipal Golf Course.
It's like this pleasant, small public golf course, and there's like birds calling behind us, and it doesn't feel like this is the front lines of a border war or anything.
But the golf course is the front lines.
We can see Mexico about a quarter mile that way.
Catherine and Michael walk down to where the real action is, on the bank of the Rio Grande.
Now we got Border Patrol coverage.
Wait, where are they?
That's a truck right there.
Oh. Good thing I have my passport.
Next, an airboat comes buzzing down the river, carrying a strike team of Border Patrol agents. And they're heavily armed.
Were they wearing like commando gear?
Yeah, that was outrageous. They were like in full like SWAT camouflage.
Yeah, that was a Border Patrol airboat.
President Trump has big plans to build an impassable wall between the U.S. and Mexico. But in places like Eagle Pass, Texas, the reality is more complicated. There already is a border fence here. It goes around the golf course and continues down the road, but it peters out after a few miles. Now, for the rest of the country, Trump's wall is kind of an abstract idea. But people in Eagle Pass live life on both sides of the wall every day, even when they just want to work on their swing.
That's what it sounds like when a golf ball hits the border fence.
It's like a metaphor, guys.
Do it again.
Today, we're going to take you to a lot of places like Eagle Pass, where the idea of a border wall clashes with the reality of building one. Part of the reason is we're not exactly sure what Donald Trump will do. Since he's been in office and from the very first day of his campaign, he's talked about the wall a lot. But he hasn't offered a lot of specifics.
We will build the wall.
Oh, we're going to build the wall. Don't worry about it. We're building the wall.
35 to 40 feet up in the air. That's high. That's a real wall.
A great wall. And nobody builds walls better than me, believe me. It'll be bigger and better and stronger. And people aren't going to Home Depot and buying a ladder and walking right off. Not this wall.
The wall is getting designed right now. A lot of people say, oh. Trump was only kidding with the wall. I wasn't kidding. I don't kid.
How serious is he? The government has already started the bidding process to get a wall built, and they're moving at lightning speed. The cost could top $20 billion. Reveal's Michael Corey is back from the golf course and joins us to make sense of it all. He's mapped out the entire U.S.-Mexico border and figured out where there's already fencing in place. And Mike, can you start off by telling us what sort of barriers are on the border right now?
Okay, so there's 2,000 total miles of border between the U.S. and Mexico. Right now, there's 700 miles of fence, but some of that is double and triple layer fencing, so it actually comes out to only about 650 miles of border have fence on them today.
All right, so how much are we talking about adding?
Well, I mean, it's still a little bit unclear. We know for sure that the administration is going to replace at least 25 miles of old border fence, but that's just replacing fence that's already there. There's been some leaked documents out there that say that theoretically they could fence the whole border. I just don't see how you're going to do that, how you're going to build 1,300 miles. offense in a single president's term.
Okay, so do you think that they're actually going to build a wall? Like, in my mind, when I hear Trump talk about a wall, the first thing I think about is the Great Wall of China, like something like massive that stretches across the border. Is that realistic?
I think he's going to build something. But everything we have right now is a fence. It's pretty clearly a fence. If something is tall and metal and has holes in it, that's a fence. I don't know what else to call it. The federal government has left a lot of wiggle room since Trump's election as to what they mean by a wall. If they want to, they could call the existing fence a wall. That's within the definition that they set. But that's not really what Trump talked about on the campaign trail. I mean, he even said before, oh, it's going to be this precast concrete thing that doesn't have any holes. I certainly don't think they're going to do the whole thing that way. That presents a lot of logistical challenges. Also, the Border Patrol doesn't like that because they can't see through it. They can't see what's going on the other side. So they actually prefer fence that you can see through.
Okay, so we know Trump wants to build a wall, but what are the strategic purposes behind putting these barriers on the border?
I would tell you that the wall has two basic purposes. There's this one actual tactical useful purpose in small areas where it does seem like building fence drives people to try to cross in other places besides where the fence is. That can be really dangerous. I mean, people get pushed into the desert where there's less fence and die in large numbers. But I think it's hard to argue that that doesn't work in that sense. The other thing, though, is that it looks really good on a map from a 30,000-foot view to have this nice line that says you've got the border fence. I think this is the political purpose, to say that you drew that line all the way across the border.
That was Reveal's Michael Corey. We'll hear more from him in a bit, but to give you a better sense of what the border wall is and what might be coming, we're going to take you all along the U.S.-Mexico border, starting at the Pacific Ocean, where San Diego meets Tijuana. Some places along here, you can see the oldest border fences still in use, corrugated metal plates about 10 feet high. Now, these are leftover aircraft landing mats from the Vietnam War era. Helicopter pilots use them as portable touchdown pads. Now, they're the first line of defense along the U.S. border. Reveal's Andrew Becker takes a guided tour with someone who knows the territory.
I'm driving along the U.S.-Mexico border with Sean Moran. He's a veteran Border Patrol agent and spokesman for the National Border Patrol Council, the union that represents more than 16,000 Border Patrol agents. It's also one of two federal employee unions that endorsed Donald Trump's candidacy. The president personally thanked Sean's union for its support. Sean says he's confident the president will fulfill his promise to build something, whether it's a heavily fortified, highly visible wall or something else.
It's to, really just show your presence out there and, prevent people in the first place from trying to get across the border.
Right out there.
Sean twists a knob on his radio, and a metal gate slides open, allowing us to drive in between the old and the new fence. The original fence is the old steel landing mat that was military surplus until some resourceful agents welded it together decades ago. The newer second fence is steel mesh, much of it lined top and bottom with razor wire that makes this stretch of border look like Fortress America. That presence includes stadium bright floodlights, video cameras, motion sensors, night vision scopes. None of that, Sean says, stops the flow of fence cutters leading groups headed north.
It's got so many patches. It's like a quilt, but keeps our fence crew busy at all times.
Over the 20 years Sean's worked as an agent, the Border Patrol has tripled its annual spending to nearly $4 billion a year. In that time, the border buildup has effectively shut down illegal crossings around Tijuana, but people still try to get across.
This is a current hotspot for Haitians and Cubans trying to cross the border and make it in and request asylum.
Haitians?
Haitians.
Cubans?
There are 5,000 Haitians in Tijuana right now trying to get into the United States.
How is that working?
They are coming up from Brazil, and the vast majority of them are working off the exact same script when they're claiming a credible fear, when in reality they're...
It's on the 127.
They're trying to escape poor economic conditions.
Sometimes people on the Mexican side take advantage of higher ground to pelt Sean's fellow agents with rocks, distracting them so people can slip past. Other times, migrants wait for nature to overtake the Border Patrol's technology. On rainy days, Footing in the riverbed allows them to swim while chase vehicles spin their wheels in the mud. On other days,
the fog blinds us. So it's, you know, you're going back to getting out on foot, listening, waiting for sensors to go off, hoping that, you know, it may dissipate a bit so that we can see them.
Sean says, because this stretch of border is so close to cities and the smuggling contacts who live on both sides,
I don't know that you're ever going to see it drop to zero. The heart of smuggling in Mexico is always going to be Tijuana. And people are going to make their way here first, even if it's just as a staging area to get somewhere else with a smuggling organization. And if you don't have a whole lot of money to pay a smuggling organization, they might try here.
The fence did its job here, as intended, sealing off an urban area and pushing migrant traffic into more remote areas. That was supposed to make it easier for Border Patrol agents to catch them. Instead, it changed the nature of smuggling.
Two hits on the 107, port 2, 107.
Now, we're going to travel east along the border from San Diego to our next stop in southeast Arizona. On this 460-mile stretch, there's 225 miles of what the Border Patrol calls pedestrian fence. These metal fences range from 10 feet to 18 feet. Then you have 179 miles of much shorter vehicle fences, and they look like cross wooden planks positioned low like playground seesaws. With all those miles of fences, sometimes double layers of them, the border doesn't just go through the desert. It backs right up against people's yards. We meet back up with Andrew Becker. He's with a rancher who lives right on the border. I first met up with rancher John Ladd back in 2015.
My family came in 1896.
We met on his 16,000-acre Arizona ranch that butts up against the tiny border town of Naco. John's straight out of an old Western, updated for the 21st century. The 61-year-old wears a bushy silver mustache and a brown cowboy hat. He carries a smartphone instead of a six-shooter. He took me out in his red pickup, bumping over a rolling dirt road that fronts the border fence. John showed me where trucks got the better of his fence again and again.
This is an area where they're ramping.
So wait, describe it again.
They got big metal ramps coming up from the south side up to the top and then ramps on this side that they drive ramp the trucks through.
Yep, they would drive right over the fence. John told me that people also go through the fence on foot.
The unique part of our ranch is it's 3 miles wide, and from the border to the highway, it takes about 40 minutes to walk it. You jump the wall, you walk 40 minutes, you get a ride, and you go wherever you want to go.
This was in June when the cicadas were out on the ranch. Hovering in the sky about 30 miles away, a surveillance blimp kept an eye on the border from low-flying aircraft from Mexico, mainly looking for drug runners. On the ground, John was dealing with a wave of what's known as drive-thrus.
A drive-thru is a full-size pickup full of dope coming, cutting the wall down and driving through the ranch to get to the highway. We've had 47 trucks go through the ranch that haven't been caught over 3.5 years. And, you know, that's unacceptable, in my opinion. That's an embarrassment.
That was then, and this is now. I recently visited John to see if anything had changed since Trump was elected. The first thing he shows me is a new fence under construction. It's 2.5 miles long, 18 feet high, made of steel, concrete, and rebar. It isn't as fortified as the U.S. border at Tijuana, but once it's done, John says drug runners will have to try a little harder.
The 5-foot-tall plate at the top is so if they lean a shorter ladder up against it, they can't get a handhold to climb over the top. So they are going to have an 18-foot ladder to do this.
The smuggling traffic has changed since our last visit. There have been a lot fewer marijuana drive-thrus, which John says is good.
But that increased the mule traffic, the human backpackers. And so, you know, right now it's probably 2 or 3 a week is of the mule loads going through. And that's increased quite a bit over the last 5 years. It used to be 1 a week, and then since they stopped the vehicles, now they're backpacking it more.
Whatever fence, barrier, or wall was built here John's convinced there's a better way to keep drug traffickers and other smugglers off his land.
Putting additional agents up here, and the Border Patrol can do it. They have the people that can do it. If they're allowed to do it from our Congress, I think we'll have the problem solved. If that works, then I's a hero. If it doesn't work, then I'm just another dumb cowboy.
John Ladd might get his wish for more help on the border. President Trump last month said he wants to add 5,000 more Border Patrol agents and 10,000 more Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers. One place the Border Patrol has been directing a lot of attention recently is in the Rio Grande Valley in South Texas. That's where we're headed next, to the town of Los Sabinos. It's about 800 miles south and east from John Ladd's property. Along the way, there's 103 miles of pedestrian fence and 123 miles of vehicle fence. But in Los Sabinos, there is no fence. Reveal's Michael Corey tells us why.
We're driving into Los Sabinos with Aurora Mirta Flores Trigo. She's a 67-year-old who lives just outside town. She warns me to watch my speed.
See, here you have to stay at 45.
Here's why. The streets are crawling with the U.S. Border Patrol's white and green trucks. And then there's the state police cars. A couple hundred feet above us floats an aerostat. That's a small surveillance blimp tethered to the ground.
Another blimp. Apparently, Thursday is blimp day.
If you saw this in a city, you'd think some kind of major raid was brewing. Here, it's just another morning.
Los Sabinos is a very, very small little village. Most of the pioneers are all gone.
But many of Aurora's relatives have stayed here. As we drive by, she points out their houses.
This cousin is mine, and this is my brother here. He's also in the list.
The list she's talking about was on a Justice Department document that showed up in her mailbox in January. It told her the federal government was suing 58 people and her extended family. That's how eminent domain works. The government sues you to force the sale of the property.
It's farther a little down. It's going to be through here, yes, right here. Yeah.
We turn off on a dirt road so we can get closer to the 16 acres the family's owned for over a century. The government doesn't want all the land, but it wants to build a section of the border fence on a one-acre swath right through the middle.
These people from wherever they're from, they don't know what this land means to the family.
Hundreds of other people do know what Aurora's family faces. In other border states, the feds already owned most of the land where they built the fence. But in South Texas, many landowners have lived here for generations. So the government had to sue. We looked up court records from all the eminent domain suits the Department of Justice filed against landowners. In South Texas alone, it filed about 320 cases in the last decade. Since the late 1990s, the government has spent at least $40 million on land for the border fence. Here's the bottom line. If the government wants your property, eventually it will take it. But some landowners hold out as long as they can, including Aurora's cousin, Alida Flores Garcia.
Los Sabinos will shine tonight. Los Sabinos will shine. When the moon goes up and the sun goes down, Los Sabinos will shine. That was my mother's little verse.
10 years ago, the federal government tried to build a fence on Alida's property, but she held out. And eventually, the government walked away. It's unclear whether the Trump administration will try again. If it does,
the majority of my land is going to be on the other side.
The barrier would cut Alida off from most of her 30 acres, including her favorite spot, a little riverside beach with shiny sand.
And I just sometimes I just park along the riverbeds and I just listen to the radio. I hear the sound of the trees and the smell of the water, and it's so relaxing.
It is nice on the river. But all that surveillance is in Los Sabinos for a reason.
I'll be honest, we did have the drugs coming in. We did have illegal immigrants coming in, but with no danger.
They're just passing through, she says, and they don't bother her. She's much more worried about the idea of a wall on her property. And all that ground and air surveillance that outsiders find kind of creepy, she loves it.
Technology has really helped our little town here. Feet on the ground has also helped us a lot, and I would rather give my taxpayers' money to something like that than to a wall that if the river hits it, I don't think it's going to be there anymore.
The Rio Grande twists and turns here, and surrounds Los Ebenos on three sides. When the river floods, as it did in 2010, the village turns into an island. And that risk of flooding is what ultimately chased the government away, and not just because it might destroy the fence. Any flooding that spills into Mexico along the Rio Grande violates an international treaty. It's one reason previous administrations gave up trying to build a border fence here.
As I said, as a river gives, the river takes away.
That story was from Reveal's Michael Corey with producer Catherine Miskowski. It's about 100 miles from Los Ebenos to the end of the U.S.-Mexico border. In between, there are 55 miles of tall metal pedestrian fence and none of the shorter vehicle fence. Along this stretch, short segments of the fence with varying degrees of security in between continue eastward until the final checkpoint between Brownsville and Matamoros. We've now taken you from the Pacific Ocean to the Gulf of Mexico, just shy of 2,000 miles. When we come back, we'll look at another international barrier that Trump has held up as a model for what he wants in this country. You're listening to Reveal.